First of all, Happy New Year to our next guest. Great to talk to you again. Pam Colleen, how are you?
I'm great. Happy New Year, Tom.
And I imagine at this time of year, you are just inundated with people who want your advice and your help in terms of losing weight, getting in shape, turning their life around, making a better them. They need your expertise.
Well, this is the time of the year people are looking for solutions. You know, they seem to have been battling the obesity battle or the overweight battle for many, many years, trying all sorts of different fad diets. And by this time of the year, they get frustrated and are looking for new solutions. And unfortunately, what we're going to be talking about today is the absolute opposite from the belief systems that they've been hearing for many, many years now. In fact, what the weight loss experts are saying is actually backfiring on many, many people and causing all sorts of weight gain, and not just that, but other symptoms as well, such as mood issues and so on. So what we've been doing for many, many years in terms of following weight loss advice has been compromising our health overall and really not addressing the real reasons why we're having this obesity epidemic in the first place. So, you know, we're getting misled at so many different levels. And I know you got a special book for Christmas that you want to talk about, Tom, and really what's in that book, and I did manage to, you know, take a look at it online. I haven't got a copy of the book, but I did manage to take a look at what they're saying in that book, and this is giving people really good advice, as a matter of fact.
But it's a surprise,
eh? Yeah, but it flies in the face of what the dietary dictocrats are telling us.
Now, because it's one of the top resolutions, it's always, and it's one of those ones, I want to lose weight, get in shape, that people, and there's certainly people are, you know, and you always make the point, you don't put all your focus on your body if it takes away from your mental stability, if you will. Or there's so many things that we can starve our body of calories, but we're also starving our brain.
That's right.
There's a balanced way to go about it, that being fat, even though you may be getting all these great things in your brain, it's not necessarily healthy, but being skinny is not necessarily healthy from a mental standpoint either.
Right.
Why is that?
Yeah, you want to find your optimal weight. And even some of the newer research is showing that if you have a BMI of about 25, which means you, on average you might be about 20 pounds overweight, that these people actually live longer than people who have a lower BMI. So we don't want to get obsessed with being thin or skinny or being a size 2 or a size 4. We don't want to focus on that. What we want to do is find our optimal weight where we feel the best in our skin. So
okay, how do I go about that? Where do I find, how can I determine what my best weight would be?
Well, it basically goes by how you're feeling. If people are feeling awful mentally, emotionally, spiritually, they've got to be doing something wrong, because Mother Nature did not make a mistake. We're not supposed to have these feelings on a permanent basis. And that's
so looking good in a pair of jeans but feeling lousy is no way to go through life.
No, and there are a lot of very dangerous weight loss systems out there that are actually causing a lot of mood symptoms. And, when I talk to people who've done fad dieting, invariably I find out that they have depression, anxiety, sleep problems, inattention, all sorts of different issues.
Okay, but am I depressed because I'm overweight? Like, I mean, are the two linked together? Or am I depressed and overweight and they're separate issues? You know what I mean? Because I could have poor body image. I could be depressed. I could be anxious. And it could be related to my weight in terms of, everything revolves around how heavy I am. If I could just get down to that size 2, I know life will be better.
Well, then that's what society is society is putting that kind of pressure on us so that we feel disappointment constantly because we're not that size too. So that is indeed part of the issue. But going back in history, I know Gary Taubes talks about this in his books, Good Calories, Bad Calories, and his newest book, Why We Get Fat. And he talks about weight loss experts who, back in, say, the 1920s, would put people on a diet high in animal fat. So they were eating lots of red meat,
right?
Lots of butter and so on. They were eating 3 square meals a day, essentially, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They're getting a little bit of exercise, not a lot, and they would very, very healthfully and easily lose 2 to 3 pounds a week. And when he reported his findings, he said that as people followed this high-fat diet, that their moods also improved. And Dr. Jay Wertman, who is the person who is focused in the CBC documentary My Big Fat Diet, and he did this experiment out in British Columbia, Colombia, where he took about 100 people, and again, he put them on a diet high in animal fat. And one of his observations, although it was not part of what he was looking at in the actual study, but one of his observations was that the people who were following this diet also improved their mood.
How much, when we look at our weight loss, get in shape, how much credence or how much should we stress in terms of moving more? How much should we stress in terms of eating better? I mean, where do we balance it out? Because it's really hard through exercise alone to lose calories. I mean, you think you're burning a lot of calories, but, you know, a two-hour run will only burn about 500 calories. 500 calories isn't much, you know. That's a lot of work to burn all those calories. So are we putting the wrong emphasis on exercise when it comes to losing weight?
Well, yes, there's a lot of myths associated with exercise and moving more, eating less, calories, and so on. And that's what Gary Taubes talks about in his book, Why We Get Fat. We've been really misguided in terms of looking at what's really causing this obesity epidemic. I mean, when you look at the nutrient density of a food, like a piece of steak or like butter, these are foods that are very stabilizing for your hormones. And a lot of weight gain is actually based upon hormonal control. And when you're eating too many carbohydrates, or let's just say plant-based foods in general, that is very hard on your metabolism. That's very hard on balancing, on your hormonal balance. So we have to also consider basically being able to control blood sugar levels, which in turn will have a stabilizing effect on your hormones. And that's really what's being disregarded, because fundamentally it's carbohydrates that drive insulin and insulin that drives fat. And that's one of the main reasons why we're seeing so much weight gain today in society. There are, though, Tom, other reasons why people will gain weight. And unfortunately, Gary doesn't talk about these in his book, but I encounter these on a very regular basis. Like people, for example, who have poor digestion, you'll see that they have a lot of trouble losing weight or finding their optimal weight.
All right. Why don't we talk about those when we come back? But first, when you say carbohydrates and then the connection with insulin and then insulin drives fat, is this also then why we see such a rise in diabetes? Because eventually the hormone response of insulin gets just muted because we fed our body all these refined carbohydrates that even though people may not be obese or grossly overweight, because they've eaten just carbohydrates, now we're seeing this rapid rise in diabetes across our country. Is that a strong connection that we found?
Oh, it's a very strong connection. In fact, back in 1992, a friend of mine, Dr. Louise Light, warned the Secretary of Agriculture at the USDA that they could not publish that particular food guide, which was recommending 5 to 10 servings of fruits and vegetables on top of 6 to 11 servings of grain. And she told the Secretary back then that they would cause a diabetes and obesity epidemic, but the Secretary of Agriculture caved to the influence of lobbyists and ended up publishing that food guide. And now look what we're dealing with, an epidemic of diabetes and obesity.
Exactly what they predicted. 15 minutes after 11 o'clock. All right, when we come back, tell me other reasons why we gain weight. And then, of course, I need your expertise on how we can lose weight. What are the ways to lose weight? But at the same time, I mean, you have to make sure you are healthy, brain-wise, emotionally. Being skinny and miserable is a terrible way to go through life. Being in a good, well-proportioned body and having a healthy brain and having, you know, normal levels of serotonin and all these mood stabilizers, that's what our goal is, isn't it? That's our goal. So 60 minutes after 11 o'clock, more with Pam Killeen when we return on News Talk 610 CKTV. 21 minutes after 11 o'clock, this is News Talk 610 CKTV. Nutritional consultant Pam Killeen joining us on the program. And Pam, one thing I've learned talking to you and then reading others is our overemphasis on starchy carbohydrates and our phobia with fats has led to the exact opposite intention of what most people want and has made them even fatter.
Has made them even fatter.
It's like, no. As long as I'm eating starchy potatoes and grains and cereals and buns and bread, how can bread be bad for me? It's like, yes, but this is what happens in your body. I mean, when you have fats, they satisfy you and you eat less. Therefore, you don't require as many calories. You don't put on the pounds. With breads and pastas, you eat more. And the body takes that excess and stores it as fat.
That's right.
And our emphasis is totally wrong.
That's right. Essentially, the foods you're talking about are empty calories, and they disrupt, hormonal balance. They starve the brain because they don't have those fats that help stabilize the nervous system and feed the brain. So, you know, it's a lose-lose situation when you're emphasizing your calories on too many plant-based foods in general.
Now, if that's one of the reasons why, what other reasons is it that we gain weight? You're talking about poor digestion. How do I fix that?
Oh, yes, and this is relatively new research, but it has been budding for 5 or so years now, and it's fascinating because what they've done in labs, for example, is they've injected or implanted bad bacteria into the guts of lab animals, and when they do this, of course, they notice that the lab animal will gain weight and not have the ability to lose weight. So they know that gut flora plays a role in terms of our ability to control our weight, and this can be very, very difficult to do, of course, at a time when we are eating too many sugars in general, and possibly even antibiotics play a role in this. Taking antibiotics and not after you take your antibiotics, not regulating your healthy flora can lead to long-term problems, because when you take an antibiotic, for example, it kills the good and the bad bacteria, leaving you at risk for getting too much bad bacteria overgrowing in your gut. So eating and taking foods in that help regulate gut flora are very, very crucial on a day-to-day basis. And so these are the foods. This is why on your show, Tom, I'm always suggesting to people that, you know, about eating things like raw sauerkraut, high-quality kefir, high-quality yogurt. All of these foods are very, very important in terms of helping to regulate gut flora. And that, too, like I said, can have an impact on your ability to find your optimal weight.
How do they, briefly, without getting into too much of a science lecture though, but how do they, and the only reason is because I find once I know the process, once I understand the process, I'm more likely to adapt it. How does having sauerkraut, kefir, and what else did you say?
Yogurt, those and types of foods.
Okay, yeah. How does that help my gut?
Essentially, what they're doing is they're trying to acidify your gut. And that's where, if you think about the probiotic that you hear so commonly about, it's called Acidophilus,
right.
ACID. So what you want to do is create an acidic environment in your gut in order to encourage the growth of the friendly flora. What tends to happen when people get sick is the gut, generally speaking, moves towards a more alkaline state, which encourages the growth of the bad stuff. And in order to encourage the growth of the good stuff, it's very important to acidify the gut.
Now, should I also be taking, if I have not taken antibiotics, but I think my gut, or I suspect my gut may be one of the reasons, or even as a precautionary measure, should I take a course of probiotics or, I know you can just get them over the counter. That would be, should I just take probiotics?
Yes. I mean, for many, many years, I've heard that in other countries like Japan and even Germany, when people are prescribed antibiotics, that very commonly the doctors also recommend a probiotic to go along with it. Now, the key thing is you don't take the probiotic with the antibiotic because you're going to negate the effects of the probiotic. So you need to be you need to discriminate in terms of the time that you take.
Okay, but if I haven't had antibiotics, but maybe my gut has gotten out of control just through natural processes or the foods I've eaten, is taking a course of probiotics, is that good or not?
I think so. It's a good precaution. I prefer people using food simply because then you're also taking in other nutrients like the high-quality fats and or minerals and so on. But if people have the money to afford to take some probiotics, by all means, I just don't like people to rely on them long term.
Right. Okay. All right. Rather than, getting your fix through a series of pills, by eating whole healthy foods, it'll fix it and nourish the body at the same time.
Absolutely. It's more cost effective in the long run.
All right. And what else causes us to gain weight?
You know what? Lack of sleep, Tom. When people have trouble sleeping, they're not getting enough sleep. They're not regulating their hormones properly at night by having a deep, quality, restorative sleep. That, too, can actually increase stress hormones. And, of course, when you increase your stress hormones, you will increase your weight as well. So getting a high-quality sleep is crucial, and that's one of the main things I have to work on with people when I first start to work with them, is I have to solve the mystery as to why they're not sleeping at night. And that's why I get them on certain foods to help stabilize blood sugar, to help relax the adrenal glands, and so that they have a better quality of sleep at night.
Now, we are in a chaotic, busy, light-infused world where I can stay up all hours if I want with artificial light, and it doesn't matter, and I have stimulants now available to me through coffee and tea. But do you find with your clients that most people if anything has to be sacrificed, it's sleep, which leads to less energy, more weight gain. That, again, it's counterintuitive to what we saw with carbohydrates. With our, we're so fat phobic that it's led us to be more fat. We're so sleep, that's the last thing we'll cut is sleep. But by cutting sleep, we become less energetic. We have less, we can become fatter, that it really deteriorates our health. That if we just got that extra hour of sleep, we'd be so much better off.
Yeah. All of my clients have to sleep 9 hours a night.
Nine. Wow.
Even the farmers, I work with, I insist that people sleep 9 hours a night. Solid. Good quality sleep, and it takes a while to get people to that level. That's how ironic the situation is. I mean, it shouldn't be a lot of work to be able to convince somebody to sleep 9 hours a night, but it is a lot of work. It's very difficult to educate people in that direction.
I'll tell you what my problem is, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more, then I'll tell you about the book, and then you go over whether or not it's a decent diet. My problem is I get so much rest on the weekends because we can sleep in, and then Sunday night I stay up late. And then Monday, I have to get up early. And then by Monday night, I'm crashing. And then by Tuesday, it's like, you know what? Obviously, my sleep is slightly off. That I'm using the weekend to catch up. And then I'm over-rested. And then Monday, I make up. But then I go to bed late maybe Monday. And then wake up tired Tuesday. So I think that's what I have to do. I think I have to be more regular in my sleep hours throughout, even including the weekend. Because I can't, I don't know if you just can't catch up on the weekend, can you?
I think there is some truth to that. I think people can catch up.
Okay.
Yeah.
But certainly not all the hours I'm missing during the week.
It depends. We'll talk about it after the break, but it starts to get a little complicated because it does become very individual as well.
Right. All right. As everything seems to be. 28 minutes after 11, news is next. A little more chat with Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, healthy living expert, when we come back. My name's Tom McConnell, and this is News Talk 610 CKTV. 36 minutes after 11 o'clock, Pam Colleen, what else are we doing to sabotage your diet? We're not getting enough sleep. We're our guts may be off. We're eating the wrong foods. What else sabotages our diet, and what else causes us to gain weight?
Well, I think what I should mention, first of all, is what we were touching on before the break, and that was this idea of getting high-quality sleep and being able to know when to go to sleep at night, how much sleep to get, and how you should feel in the morning, ideally after a restorative sleep. There's a book called Lights Out by T.S. Wiley, and in the book, it's recommended to go to bed at sunset and wake up before sunrise, sort of like your farmer's hours.
Okay.
And to sleep in a pitch black room so it doesn't disrupt the balance of your hormones at night. So one of the things the story I was going to tell you is of one of my clients who figured this out on his own. Keep in mind, he's doing an entire program with me, not just focusing on improving his sleep. But one of the things that happened to him was after he read that book, he decided he was going to go to bed at 9 o'clock at night, you know, at sunset, and then wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and see what happened. And sure enough, when he did that, he found he wasn't groggy during the day. He found out that he had more energy during the day. So for some people, that can really, really be helpful. I'm not one of these people who will go to bed super early, you know, on a regular basis. I go to bed at a relatively normal hour, I would say, but I'm not one of these who's going to do that. But for some people, that can work wonders. So again, you have to listen to the body, you know, individualize it for yourself and see what works best for you in terms of your circadian rhythms and how best you get your high quality sleep at night.
It's a little trial and error, isn't it? Even with diet, although most diets work for most people, when it comes to sleep, it's like, well, the principles work, but the exact time for you seems to be very individualistic when it comes to determining how much sleep someone needs.
Yeah, and it's really, but when I'm working with people who are very sick, so I'm working with people who have terrible depression, fatigue, anxiety, sleep disorders, and so on in the first place. So these people, I already know that their biochemistry is a mess, and it's going to take a lot of work to fix it.
Okay, and sleep is just one of the building blocks.
Yes, it's one of the primary things I do in the beginning of the program is try to figure out how we can get this person sleeping better. Because I know primarily if they don't do that early in the program, it's going to take them a lot longer to get well. Because sleep is so restorative. And so it's very, very important. And I think I've given this tip on your show before, where before you go to bed, it's important to eat some animal.
think I heard, I saw Dr. Oz talk about salt, that salt is critical before sleep, that a little bit of salt will really help you get to sleep.
Yeah, it's a natural hypnotic.
Yeah.
It's also a natural antidepressant as well. You know, the salt phobia that we've been subjected to is yet another myth, is yet another problem that is so pervasive in society, where people are being told not to eat salt. And, you know, nothing could be further from the truth. Our ancestors always consumed salt in their diet. It was natural salt. It wasn't refined salt like we see today. It was unrefined sea salt. And we'd eat probably over the course of a day, maybe a teaspoon to a teaspoon and a half of salt a day. And then that's what's healthy.
All right. Now, I got a book over Christmas, and it was a really fascinating book. And I picked it up at the bookstore just to read it. I was going by, and I was like, I was dismissive at first. I was like, 4-hour body. Are you kidding me? 4-hour body. What is this? And then it was this fascinating book, and the guy's name is Tim. Oh, I forget his name.
Ferris.
Tim Ferriss. That's it. Timothy Ferriss. All right. So Tim Ferriss, who wrote 4-Hour Work Week, and he said, here's how you can break down your work week to be so effective. And then he applied it to himself, and he's the ultimate lab rat, because he doesn't look at all the studies. He does it on himself. He's the one who's like, you know what? I took blood tests all the time. I go see doctors all the time. I have lots of medical devices in my house so I can measure exactly what's going on in my body at the time. And this is what worked for me. This is what I found worked for me. And he has a website as well. And he goes, this is what's worked for a lot of people on my website to lose weight. And his weight loss program, which overlaps your weight loss program quite a bit. And he has 5 rules. And I want you to go, tell me what you think of the rules. Okay. So his 5 rules are simple. 1, lose all the white carbs, bread, sugar, rice, pasta, potatoes, etc. Lose all the white carbs. Mm-hmm. 2, eat the same meals over and over. Find a meal you like and do it. The restriction of choice will then limit you in terms of cheating and go. And it goes, you know what? Don't you like plan it out, but eat the same meals over and over again that are healthy. But that's it for losing weight, not for the rest of your life, but just while you're losing weight, just eat the same meals over again. Don't drink your calories. Don't eat fruit. Fructose is horrible in terms of what it does to the blood sugar level. And it's like, yeah, don't eat fruit. And finally, take 1 day off per week, not necessarily for you to I need 1 cheat day. But he says there's important physiological factors going on in the body that happens with a weekly binge that really stimulate the body to shed even more pounds. So you need to have 1 binge a week, just 1. Some people can even get away on 1 meal, but 1 day a week. Don't eat fruit. Don't drink your calories. Eat the same meals over and over again. And he gives you tables and it says, all right, choose 1 from here, 1 from here. I think there's 3 or 4 groups where you choose 1 from each. And then, but lose the white carbs is rule 1. Lose the white carbs and start from there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that, you know, removing the flour, the sugar, and so on, all of those rules, that rule it's in and of itself is a good idea. I don't mind if people eat a little potato, as long as it's smothered in butter and high-fat sour cream. so I think the butter or the potato is probably an okay food to eat from time to time, but it's not something I would overindulge in myself.
Right, you're not having half a plate of mashed potatoes.
No, I mean, if I'm lucky, like if I have a steak and a potato, I can barely get through half the potato anyway, you know, so okay. I don't personally eat a lot of potato, but, you know, I do totally agree with him on avoiding juice, because juice is just going to skyrocket your insulin levels. It doesn't matter if it's beet juice or carrot juice or apple juice or orange juice, you know, you're taking in a concentrated source of sugar, and that's very, very hard on your pancreas, so absolutely agree with him on the juice. Fruit, you have to eat in absolute moderation if you're going to eat it at all. I don't mind if people throw some blueberries or raspberries, just a few of them maybe in a nice high-quality yogurt.
Okay. But minimize the fruit.
Minimizing fruit is a really good idea because fructose is very, very hard on the liver.
Okay, I didn't know that. All right. And then what about eat the same meals over and over?
Well, you know, I don't mind if people want to eat steak 3 times a day. That I don't mind.
I don't know if I can afford to eat steak 3 times a day.
I don't expect anybody to become a Martha Stewart by trying to think, you know, by thinking that to eat healthy, it takes a lot of work, because it doesn't.
That's right.
So if that's what it takes to get people to eat healthy, is to get them to eat grass-fed steak, ideally, you know, 3 times a day, then all the power to them. It shouldn't be complicated to eat healthy. I mean, think about it. Our ancestors, when we were hunter-gatherers, we couldn't have eaten complex meals. We eat very straightforward meals. And so it doesn't take, you know, you don't have to be a master chef to do this. But I can see where he's coming from by saying that, because, you know, we all like things to be simple. And if it's just 3 simple meals.
That's right. I think that's that's where he was going. That simple is better. Take away choice, and then you won't ruin your diet by trying to think out, you know, trying to make it overly complex. Yeah. No. Keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah. I have on my website, pamkaleen.com, I have links for menu and meal ideas to help people, you know, to guide people in the right direction
over how
to get to traditional foods.
Okay.
And I even, you know, there's instructional videos and menu and meal ideas and even a small recipe book on my homepage that I hope can help people, give them more ideas if they get bored on that principle. But I eat that way. I eat very simply. I don't eat complicated meals, and I do tend to eat a lot of the same foods over and over again. And that's just more of a subconscious choice than anything.
All right, Bill in the Falls, you got a question to Pam about sauerkraut.
Yes. I was just wondering where you can buy good cultured sauerkraut. I would assume that the canned sauerkraut is not as good. It's probably preserved in some way.
That's right. It's been pasteurized if it's sitting on the shelf in a grocery store, typically. But I know Wolfgang Fenning. He's an organic farmer here in southern Ontario, and he supplies an absolutely gorgeous raw sauerkraut to the health food stores. So if you ask your health food store, they should be able to access Fenning's catalog and should be able to get the raw sauerkraut. That's just one company that I know of. There may be others that I don't know of, but certainly check at your health food store.
Okay, thank you very much.
Pam, we'll leave it there. I got to go to break, but thanks again. Can I make sauerkraut? Is it difficult to make?
Very, very simple. And in fact, on my homepage, there's an instructional video there to help people learn how to make raw sauerkraut at home. Any child could do it. It's a fun experiment for a family to take on.
Wow. All right. And then, of course, known in different cultures, but maybe at Asian grocery stores, or is that with kimchi, same thing? Is that also preserved somehow?
It may be preserved. It's very difficult to say. The only way to know for sure is if you make it yourself, which
right.
is
okay.
what I really highly
recommend.
Or find
a guy who sells cultured sauerkraut or kimchi.
Yeah.
Once you find that, then you're golden.
Yeah, you're golden. Absolutely.
All right. So more information, pamkaleen.com.
That's right.
Pamkaleen.com. All sorts of food information and great lifestyle expertise, and especially some great nutritional advice that you're never going to get in the Canada Food Guide or from the so-called experts, because what they've been touting is completely backwards. Pam, always a pleasure. We'll talk in a couple of weeks again.
Sounds good, Tom. Thanks so much.
Take care. There's Pam Kaleen. Again, pamkaleen.com if you want more information. Quick break on the program. When we come back,